Recording.
All right, thank you for joining us for our May chapter luncheon. This one obviously feels much different than our normal chapter luncheons. It's a new world that we're all living in, and I appreciate everyone. Thank you, Don, for wearing your mask. Appreciate everyone joining in, sharing your videos where you're able to. This is the first of what is likely the start of many chapter virtual meetings for IFMA Charlotte. We look forward to seeing everyone in person whenever that is possible again. Until that time, we're proud to bring you today's webinar, a panel discussion on pandemic readiness, response plan, and return to operations. First, a few housekeeping items. I'd like to ask everyone again to remind yourself, put yourself on mute if you're not speaking. This will eliminate background noise, provide audio clarity for our speakers, and provide audio clarity for the webinar recording that will be available shortly. We will have a Q&A session, so if you'd like to put, you can either raise your hand, use the chat box function, or you can wait until the Q&A session, which will take place at the end of the presentation. Participation is encouraged. This session is being recorded, and like I said, will be available on the IFMA Charlotte website and through social media platforms shortly. The presentation deck, of which you can see here, will also be available. Participants, again, can raise your hand in the lower left or right portion of your screen and submit questions. You can also use the chat box that I'll be monitoring throughout. I'd like to begin by thanking our chapter sponsors. Hold on. There we go. Our chapter sponsors, Redley, Spangler, Radco, Carolina Site, Terra Green, Cabro, GP Pro. Flying Locksmiths, also Carolina. We also would not be able to operate without the support of all of our members today. Although this year has presented challenges, our goal at IFMA Charlotte is to maintain membership engagement through whatever means possible. So today that means by offering this webinar panel discussion. The 2020 printed directory is ready. It's printed and it's available. Please navigate over to the latest newsletter. You can use the link provided in that newsletter and submit to us and let us know how you would like to receive your printed directory. You can also email admin@ifmacharlotte.com if you have any questions about that or any other questions. World FM Day was yesterday, so thank you to all of the FMs around the world for your continued dedication to the FM industry, and this also goes for all of our service providers. Without your support as vendor partners in this industry, the facilities management world would definitely come tumbling down. Additional upcoming webinars from the RBI, the Research Business Institute for the for IFMA, are available here. Again, this presentation will be up shortly, so the links are active and you can click on them. Other news, the pandemic manual, a joint effort by ABM, the IFMA, several IFMA chapters and councils, and the IFMA Foundation is available. It's a free publication. Navigate over to this link for the foundation. You can also donate. The foundation is a nonprofit arm of IFMA International. So further foundation news, they have a $30 for 30 pledge. That all proceeds go to the IFMA Foundation to further support the initiative of the Global Workforce Institute, which is to make the FM the career choice of industries. So with that, I'll present over our speakers. Today, we've got five panelist speakers presenting to us, John Gendro and Jeff Shea of Redley SCS. Sabrina Stabenow of Spangler Restoration with Bob Goodlow. And Sabrina, I'm sorry, a quick finger typo there for you.
That's okay.
And Courtney Fallon with Airtight Facilitech. With that, Jeff and John, I'll turn over the mic to you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Jeff and I are going to kind of tag team this a little bit, but I think part of what we've been working on is just trying to give you a little bit of feedback as to what the new norm is going to look like and as we move forward into reoccupancy. We've seen a lot of changes, obviously, over the last few months that kind of lead us down this path. But really, so far, over the first couple of months, we've seen a lot of efforts in creating response plans. Basically, that's going to translate into something brand new as we look to the future. I think the biggest thing and biggest takeaway for all of us is, you know, here we are in a meeting where we're doing it electronically and doing it from our homes or other office areas. So currently we have a lot of buildings out there that are occupied very sparsely, if you will. So a lot of changes are coming. And I think what you're going to see are things such as the social distancing pieces that start to affect your density. There's going to be a lot of takeaways from the janitorial perspective as well. For us, the biggest things we're seeing are the influx of labor. We've definitely are going to see higher wages, I think, as we look down the road. Frontline cleaners are not going to want to put themselves at risk without having some reasonable living wages. So that's one of the things we're looking at. We've already got some of our larger customers that are in partnership with us, trying to help us navigate down that road. Cleaners in the past have wore very limited PPEs. For us in the future, you're probably going to see people in masks cleaning your offices. Gloves are always been mandatory, but you're going to see a very different look to the cleaners and the professionals that are out there. And it's going to be a different world. I think that touch point cleanings, and when we look at SOWs out there, the way they're written today, through the response plan over the last several months, I think you're going to see that start to be integrated into SOWs as we move forward, simply because the touch point cleanings, for the most part, didn't exist to the degree that they have to today. So that's a lot of what we're going to be looking for as we move forward into this new era. I think our overall, it's going to take a great deal of partnership between the FM world and the supplier world to be able to pull this together. Initially, we saw a lot of challenges with chemicals, PPEs, and so forth, where you could not get your hands on a lot of this product. We were fortunate. We had a significant back stock, and we were reasonably prepared for this. I think this has gone a lot further than any of us anticipated, but the good news is that the manufacturers today are starting to catch up. So we're seeing an influx of our back orders being filled. There's still a few things out there that we can't get our hands on, but for the most part, everything from the chemical lines to the microfiber to the PPEs and just about everything we use in this battle against COVID-19 is something that we can get our hands on today, and we have ample stock. So that's a good change and a good shift from where we were just a month and a half to 2 months ago. So a lot of movement in those areas. I know Jeff has got some other insight he'll share with you more on a national level. For what we're seeing across our footprint. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Jeff for a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, John. And hey, thanks, Dallas. Appreciate you guys having us on today. But, from a national perspective, it's pretty interesting because, and I know we've got some other individuals from the janitorial industry on the presentation, but, about 30, 45 days ago, we became everybody's best friend. We've had, I can't tell you how many client conferences, meetings such as this with all of our major accounts saying, what are we doing? What do we need to be doing? And, the prevalent question that comes up is, do you think this will change the industry? And wholeheartedly, it's not only going to change the janitorial industry, but facility management industry, commercial real estate, you know, we're looking at change everywhere, and we're trying to respond and react and assist with that change. So a lot of what John said that you're seeing in Charlotte is what we're seeing from a national basis too. I'm actually, my office is in Dallas, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same questions, a lot of the same social distancing issues. You know, some of the things that I think people need to really consider when they look at their janitorial programs, you know, they start mandating things such as additional PPE, stuff that wasn't in the original contract. So there's a cost to that, and that has to be accounted for. So I think, you know, there will be sort of a reevaluation. I know in Dallas, and a lot of our other major markets, you know, each market has this sort of baseline. You know, everybody knows janitorial is X cents per square foot, and that has come to be the standard. Well, I think that standard is going to change, and it's going to change drastically based on the requirements and the needs of the facilities that we're cleaning now. Give you an example. We have one major client that it's a commercial office building, third-party tenants. A couple of large anchor tenants happen to be national law firms. And when they open back up for occupancy on the 18th, in two of those major client areas, substantial square footage, we are literally changing our specification from a standard, you know, commercial office cleaning to almost a medical office type cleaning. So there is a substantial increase in the cost per square foot. And currently the tenants are being asked to directly pay for that, and they're okay with it. You know, historically, everybody has challenged rates, trying to get them as low as possible. And we've created this, I guess it's great for the facility management and property management side. You know, they know what their rates are going to be, but it's challenged us sometimes on labor. And I think we're going to see that change nationally as well. You know, you take one of our other major markets, which nobody would realize this, but it's Midland, Texas, you know, oil country. Rates that we charge that are acceptable in Midland are three times what they are in Charlotte, just because of supply and demand and the fact that we've got to pay that much more for labor because we're competing with the oil fields. Oil is down. At one point, it was a negative $37 a barrel. They were having to pay people to buy it and take it off their hands. But yet, the cleaning, all of the background stuff that we do in that market has not changed. In fact, in a lot of places, it's actually increased. So, you know, it's interesting times, I think, for all of us. But as John mentioned, the partnership, I think, is what's going to be key to the reoccupancy of our facilities and our buildings. Also, you know, I think facility teams are going to be a little more engaged in the day-to-day janitorial operations. You know, we've had a couple of clients come up with plans where they want to acquire ATP monitors, which basically they're used during LEED certification, during the cleaning audit to determine how clean a specific area is. It measures the light refractivity of the debris that's left on the surface after cleaning. And, you know, their thought is, well, we'll buy a bunch of these, and then our property managers and facility managers can go around throughout the day and inspect the facilities to see that the crews are doing a good job. A couple of factors there that they may have missed is those monitors, you know, they're great, but they need to be used as soon as that particular area has been cleaned. So if the cleaning crew, say it's a normal facility, they're out of there at 11 o'clock at night, and you know, facility manager, property manager shows up the next morning to do an audit with one of these devices, there's a lot of contamination that could have occurred between 11 and 9 in the morning. So, you know, it's thoughts like that we really need to start embracing on this partnership side of the field. So that's really what we're seeing. I know a lot of you guys probably have, you know, questions, and that's really what I think John and I were hoping, is to maybe discuss things with you, because I think as a whole, we're all going to gain value from that. We're all going to learn something from each other and hopefully put it into best practices as we go forward with the new normal. So that being said, Dallas, you know, do we want to open it up to questions? How do you want to do this?
Sure. Yeah. So I don't see any way for people to raise their hands, contrary to what I said earlier. So if you do have a question, feel free to unmute yourself and speak up. We also do have Sabrina Stebna and Bob Goodlow from Spangler that we can move on presenting there. So I'll give a couple minutes if anyone has questions.
Yeah, hi, this is Craig with After Disaster. I have a quick question. So are any of your customers that have been closed down for weeks at a time asking you to do these deep decontaminations, even though nobody has been in the environment to contaminate it?
Yes. Short answer is yes. We have you're seeing a lot of that, quite frankly, across the country, especially as people are looking to reoccupy their spaces. They may have a reoccupancy plan that moves into the next 30 days, 60 days, whatever the case is. And they're trying to go in and basically give a refresh of the space, hoping that that inspires confidence, I think, in their associates that may be coming back to work. So, yes, we are seeing that across the board.
We're also seeing sort of an organized plan by some of our clients that have more sophisticated facilities. Case in point, we had one facility where there was a not an employee, but yet the spouse of an employee that tested positive for COVID-19. Because of the way the facility was designed, and it's a 2.5 million square foot facility, the employer was able to pin down and track this employee's access throughout the facility based on their badge. They knew exactly where they had been and where they had approval to go. So we were able to go in and decontaminate just the specific areas that this employee had access to, mainly the common areas, entry and egress points, elevators, and then the specific floors that the person had accessed and had access to. This facility, fairly new, it's extremely high tech. Same client, different facility, they had a similar case, and you know, they had no way of tracking employee movement throughout the facility. So we ended up doing almost a 400,000 square foot deep contamination to make the employer and their employees feel comfortable that it had been, the situation had been taken care of. So a lot of our clients too are looking at it as similar to what you said. Facilities have been closed or very limited access for several weeks, and working with the clients, you know, we're looking at what's probably the smart thing to do. In a lot of cases, our services have either been postponed or moved, you know, very diminished during this time. So, you know, a week prior to reoccupancy, we're going in, we're doing not necessarily a deep decontamination of the building, but a detailed cleaning of the building. You know, one of the things that I know in the markets I've been in that really freaks people out is anytime somebody sneezes or coughs. Well, if your facility's been vacant for the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks with limited cleaning, you're going to have an accumulation of dust. Once somebody walks through the door, starts moving stuff around, the dust gets into the air. Next thing you know, somebody sneezes or coughs, and you know, people start pointing fingers, and so, you know, doing that, communicating with the tenants, letting them know what has been done. We've started a program where we're putting large flyers in building lobbies, just sort of a high level. This is what's been done to your facility before you guys reoccupy, just to help that feel good factor as they come back to work.
Communicating for confidence.
Exactly.
We've seen that in several publications from IFMA and otherwise from CNW, JLL, several return to work playbooks about that communicating piece. And that is definitely something that we want to communicate as facility managers out to our building occupants when they start reoccupying and when we start returning. We need to let them know that the facility may not have been deeply, deeply clean, but we are enhancing these cleaning efforts. They were clean a week ago with a detailed cleaning, and I wrote that down to include that in our return to work strategy. So if anyone does have questions, feel free to keep on asking. We also do have the chat box. You can submit questions directly to me if you do not want to ask.
This is Tyler. I got a question for you guys. So I'm also in the industry, and we found that a lot of clients have sought out expertise because of peace of mind and gaining confidence. What about from a legal standpoint? We've seen a lot of clients now want to point the finger and move that finger away from them just because of sheer risk mitigation, but they really want to make sure ultimately that when a subcontractor comes in there, this disinfection of certain areas is consistent and adheres to the scope of expectations that maybe that might, that maybe that contract might have contained. How can you interact and manage those conversations with your clients as they want to ensure that every area is disinfected 24/7, seven days ultimately a week, when we know all too well that that's ultimately impossible to do?
You know, again, that goes back to communication. I think that is the expectation, you know, and unfortunately in our world today, sometimes somebody's expectation is also their reality. But, you know, getting a client to understand that I can go in and disinfect an emergency hospital room, right? When is that room no longer disinfected? As soon as somebody opens the door and puts their foot in it.
Right.
At that point, from my perspective, our liability ends because we can't guarantee what happens after we leave an area. The other thing that's interesting is, you know, the ATP monitors. That's become very, very prevalent these days. People are like, oh, we're going to use these to see, make sure it's clean, make sure it's disinfected. Well, an ATP monitor will only tell you, they only gauge cleanliness. They won't tell you if there's viral material or bacterial material. It's just the cleanliness level. So, you know, it's really hard to guarantee that if you use an ATP monitor, you get a specific reading. Well, does that mean that it's virus-free? Not necessarily. You know, they can't determine that at this point. So, again, a lot of it's just communication and understanding what the expectation is. And then verifying that with the client that, yes, this is the work we've done. These are the products we have used. You know, there are products out there that we're starting to see. It's a topical treatment, and they make claims that they can mitigate bacteria on surfaces for 45, 60, 90 days. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen the specific testing. I know they're out there, and I know they're gaining popularity. But I know a lot of those are antibacterials and antifungicides. They're not antiviral. I don't know that there's an antiviral product that exists that will give you a full 90 days worth of efficacy, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring up a good point. I think at the end of the day, it's ensuring transparency and alignment on what is reasonable, what's feasible, and it's never going to be perfect. But as long as you can establish, you know, that way forward and maintain that open dialogue, I think that's what any business owner on this call and ultimately what any potential client is seeking. And sometimes they might not necessarily have that scope of expertise on site.
Exactly. We had one client in particular that brought up a very interesting point. You know, similar to what you were asking, he said, you know, as a whole, the janitorial industry is somewhat distrusted. We all know that, you know, people cheat the system. They go in, they want to clean as quickly as possible. And so, you know, as a whole, he felt like the janitorial industry was distrusted. And his question was, do you think that as we move forward, that will only increase? And I said, you know, my response to that was, well, yes, I do. But I think not only our industry, but the facilities management industry is going to start being, there's going to be a lot more speculation, you know, to build customer confidence, client confidence. We're going to have to do a lot more proving of what we do and the value that we bring to the table, you know. And then we started to explore kind of why the janitorial industry might be distrusted. And it goes back to, you know, it goes back to the labor source. I mentioned earlier that, you know, certain markets, there's a standard. Everybody knows your janitorial rate is X per square foot. You know, I'll take Charlotte, for example. You know, Charlotte's a very competitive market. When you look at the large financial institutions, their goal for the last 20 years has been to push rates down to the point where, you know, labor that's being provided, you know, just to make a reasonable profit, we can't afford to pay somebody $10 to $12 an hour, which might be the going rate. We've got to pay a substandard rate to meet the financial goals of the client and to basically make a reasonable profit. Some of the financial institutions are looking at that going, you know what? We're not getting the best people that we can paying what we're paying. So tell us what it's going to cost for us to get quality personnel that will stay here, that, you know, that will pick up this mantle of responsibility and take ownership and clean and disinfect for us. So we're starting to see sort of a paradigm shift in the way their thought process is regarding this. You know, what I told somebody, what, you know, 45 days ago, we were an expense. Today, we're a trusted and valued partner. So I think there's a paradigm shift going, and then we need to sort of embrace it and work together through it and be transparent.
Jeff, you bring up a interesting segue into one of the questions that has come in through the chat box. Are you working with tenants or FMs for individual cleaning solutions to further enhance what you guys are doing as our service providers, as our partners ultimately in this?
Both, actually. And John can probably expand on this a little bit more as well. But, you know, in some cases, we have tenants reaching out to us directly saying, I know this is what the property or the facility provides, but this is what we want. And, you know, we're willing to pay for that, for this above standard service. So how do we get there? You know, so in some cases, we may have a contract to clean the facility, but then we have, you know, a smaller contract tied to it for this specific tenant based on their conditional requirements. You know, a third party building is a lot different than a facility, because obviously you guys in a facility, you can control the overall expectation of the facility and the expenses. Third party tenants, you know, large law firm has no problem paying for additional above standard services. The smaller IT firm feels, well, why should I have to pay for those if I don't need them or don't want them? You know, and so that's kind of the challenge that we're facing nationwide as we talk to clients. You know, having a facilities and commercial real estate background myself, it's easy for me to see both sides of the table and work through that with them. But I know, you know, some tenants, they're adamant about, we're not paying more. This is, we're fine. This is all we want. And their next door neighbors want, you know, a Cadillac of services.
I think the other issue too is once you have a tenant or a company engage with the less expensive option, then all of a sudden that budget and those savings or lack thereof have ultimately been reallocated and distributed to another line item. And if they realize that they are seeking out a higher quality solution, it's going to be harder for them in the out years to obtain the additional revenue that they really want. So I think it's very important when those conversations are had, especially in today's day and age, that, you know, the folks on this call try to look towards the long term, because there can be repercussions in taking, you know, the option that might be the quick fix as opposed to the permanent solution.
Right.
I think the general rule of thumb that all of us should be following is to make sure that we're getting a solid value for what we're paying for. We chose to go with an agreement, even though the agreement, we went with probably the highest bidder, which is pretty unusual for us. Just happened they were just a little bit higher than the rest. They were in line with everybody else. But we were really looking for the quality of the cleaning. Our new service starts up on June 1st officially, and we asked them to come in early to do a special disinfection for us. So I was here over the weekend when they did the disinfection, and that actually worked really well. They did a great job, and it gave us a lot of confidence in what we're buying into.
Well, in an effort for time here and value for all of our speakers, we do have another question that may be an excellent segue over to Sabrina and Bob, and we will have time at the end for further questions. So please, if you do have them, please keep them. Sabrina and Bob, we had a question come through. What are y'all looking at for UV solutions? And that again may be a tie over to Courtney, our last speaker today. Sabrina and Bob, your floor.
Yeah, that may be better suited for Courtney there, because I just haven't had a lot of people requesting any info on that on my side there, even though I have heard out in the field these days that question being asked about UV. What we're seeing, and good points with everybody that spoke, Jeff and John, but then Don has some good points there. I've done some stuff with Don before. What we're going to really kind of hit right now is the fact of, we're going into these jobs and we're being called in and some people are saying right over the phone, hey, what's your price point and what you're doing and this and that and there. And what I've really stressed is educating, you know, the customer. We deal with a lot of residential all the way up into the commercial field. And multifamily. A lot of you know may know that apartments, you drive by an apartment complex these days and the cars, the parking lots are packed because everybody's either out of work or they're not working. But we've gone in and I've talked with a lot of people, property managers, facility managers and everything else, about, you know, as you were saying, the guarantee of stuff. What's the guarantee that this is going to kill? There are products out there, in the mold remediation field that, you know, there's a 3 to 6 month residual claim on it. And some of those manufacturers are trying to get that pushed, onto their disinfectant. And I don't think there's just enough testing as of right now. The first thing we did was look at a product that, the EPA had already gotten hold of. And let them have their testing done on it. And a lot of times that EPA testing is the dwell time, which, you know, Lysol's gotten in, you know, to some issues where the dwell time to kill this virus is not there in the product. There's a lot of claims that have come out that hand wipes don't stay wet long enough, moist long enough on themselves and on surfaces once you wipe there to for a dwell time to kill this virus. So a lot of people kind of, you know, raise their eyes to that there and ask, you know, how we're applying it, how we know that it's got a 10-minute dwell time. And a lot of times on it there, we've told them that we've had to, you know, come back in, you know, take that controlled break and, you know, bring our people to the side and then come back in and apply a disinfectant depending on what level of service they ask, because we have a couple different services, levels of service that, you know, to kind of hit the price point that they want to spend. And it's been pretty effective with us in the residential all the way up into the commercial. The liability question has been the big one for all of us. And that is, you know, our offices throughout the state and our upper management want to know, hey, as John was saying, I think it was John, customer says to us, hey, you guys come in here, clean this all up, and, you know, what's the guarantee? And, you know, you have to be the honest question and tell them, as soon as we walk out of here and, you know, John Smith comes out of a grocery store where he had touched something here and he may have got it, and he comes in and has it and starts coughing, that's it, pretty much there. There is no residual clean, you know, factor on this. They've asked us also about, you know, do we have enough PPE? Can they buy PPE from us? We're pretty much stocked up pretty well. We have a couple of large commercial accounts, government accounts here in the Charlotte area that we're doing a lot every single day in. And a lot of times here, if we're moving from area to area, we do have to take the PPE off and go into an elevator and have to go down, you know, and we go ahead and say, we're going to treat that elevator also in there. And they like that fact there that we're treating that to move from source to source on that there. They've asked the same thing about, hey, is there any testing, a clearance test on it after the fact? And I've worked with a couple of hygienists, and that's one of our stages levels that we have is a confirmed case. And we get in, we educate them about the process, the protocol that we're using. But then again, we ask them, when you call for service, do you have a confirmed case or not, or no confirmed case? Is this going to be preventative and precautionary? You know, we try to figure out what they want, what service are they looking for, and then we steer them in the right direction. That's been a big question in hotels, as the hotels have been closed down and everything else, and they're coming in there. They've asked for us, hey, what can you guys do for us in these certain areas in here? We've done stuff in Uptown Charlotte. And when I say stuff, we've done quotes of people that came in and they said, you know, we furloughed a lot of our employees. These are employees we have working. Well, these employees were long-term managers that are doing everything from laundry to security to everything else here. And we found out that they were cross-contaminating a lot in there. And so we kind of gave them options of what needs to be done. You know, let them open up their facilities, their start bringing in people and so forth, so on. One of the big ideas that I came up with, and I actually talked with a couple other hotel people, and it would also roll over to the commercial offices and stuff like that there, is once we cleaned areas, we were putting tapes on a piece of tape on a door saying this has been cleaned and sanitized, and put it on there. And it's kind of a good sign to show when you're reoccupying a building that these people come in, we've gone in, we've cleaned them, and if that tape is broken, that means somebody's gone in there. And there are some of these offices that we had that they were broke. Well, why were they broke? And no one could even ask questions. So that came into the question of, hey, you know, these offices, facilities and everything else, they need to control their population of people coming in, secure floors, like a lawyer's office I had four floors. And, you know, as soon as we walked in there, we were branded and had everything, our PPE, but we were stopped and asked why we're there. And a lot of times we were wearing PPE, but they weren't. And then we turned around and came back to facility managers and said, you know, we're getting these questions, we're doing everything that's being asked, but can we have some calls like this on Zoom where we talk to some of the higher ups and for those companies and say, you're asking us to protect ourselves there, but you're not asking your employees to protect themselves and do the due diligence on both sides there to make sure, hey, we kind of get hold of this. And they were in agreement with it. But then again, they told me, hey, we can't get the PPE. Can you guys provide PPE on there? So these are some of the things that I've seen going in there into these more commercial buildings there. We have a protocol now that automatic is glove and N95 or surgical mask minimum to go in. It goes back to peace of mind. Everybody's watching CNN, Fox News. Everybody's on the internet. Really, there's no concrete answers right now of when this may stop here. You know, we're even getting stuff from schools and nursing homes. We've dealt with a lot of nursing homes and the same thing. Just to go in and talk, you need to show that, you know, we have PPE. We're caring about, you know, even just the managers, facility managers, you know, CEOs of some of these law firms and stuff like that there. And some of them have came in and told us, go ahead, and, you know, we feel pretty safe just because you came in with this. You can relax and take a 6-7 foot distance, and we can kind of talk. A lot of times, I just say, hey, I don't know where you've been. So it's an understanding. It's an educational talk that you have to have moving into these different situations. We've also been contacted by a lot of companies. I mean, some of them Fortune 500 companies. In the area and want to have us on a retainer just for antimicrobial. And believe it or not, we've been pretty well stocked even since before this. And when we knew it was coming in, we kind of grabbed what we could get there. And right now we probably have enough, you know, it's all coming in concentrated, but mixed probably 10,000 gallons on hand. And as soon as we can get more, you know, we go ahead and order, and we're always on backlog to keep our stock up. But we actually have companies that are turning around and giving us checks to be on retainer for a quick response. And then also the fact that we have kind of a stockpile of antimicrobial, you know, for them. So these are the things that everybody that we're seeing out there that people are trying to get their hands on, get a better education on it. And, because they don't know. Everything's been pushed back. It was supposed to be March this, April, May, June, and we have a ton of estimates, quotes out there to these people, these companies, and they can't give a definite date. But, of course, peace of mind, they're going to want this done 2 weeks, 1 week before they have opening, and then all of a sudden they put it on the books and then they cancel. So you turn around and you start looking at shelf life of this chemical and this and that there. And it's just, I think it's going to be from here to the end of the year or to we get a vaccine to where you turn around and we know what's going on with the companies that are asking us to do their stuff.
And I think too, it's, you know, we've had to adjust because of what we do going into a water damage. How do we know it's been cleaned? It was cleaned. It's now dirty. Who was in or out of it? And so for us, I mean, we have had to increase our PPE for all the guys on a completely different level. The challenges that we're having, are different. We're trying to respond on the emergency side and know that you have to take precautions and look at things that and challenges we've never had before. One of the hotels, we were doing a job and it was exactly for COVID, right? Well, it was actually for an emergency restoration piece. Well, yeah, they're like, no, we're good on the COVID cleanups. We have somebody doing that. Well, and this was something that Bob had talked on briefly, was that they had laundry and they kept putting heaps of laundry on the floor. Well, so it's like the things we're dealing with, we're trying to stay safe, keep everybody in PPE. They're not in PPE, and it's just like it's all over the place. And so I think there's a lot of confusion and a false sense of safety as far as what is or isn't safe and what is or isn't happening. And I think that's a big thing. Looking back on 911 and TSA and how do you feel safe? Well, it's the same thing. I think John had said it best with Redley on clean is clean. Like, it needs to be super, super clean. Clean is going to give comfort. Well, okay, but you got grocery stores disinfecting grocery carts and they're dipping the rag back into the same solution. That does nothing if you've already cleaned a cart and you're not using a new rag. So I think things like that is just, it's all over the board, and we're trying to just stay safe ourselves and do our job. And at the same time, we have to offer these packages just to know that we can go in and make sure that something, we've applied disinfectant before we even do a water damage, and then apply disinfectant after. It's just, it's different and it's challenging for us as well.
A couple points that, you know, we're looking at going into somebody's facility, but we're also looking at where it starts for us and where it should be starting for you guys is in your home offices, your satellite offices, where people meet up, and your technicians, your cleaning staff, all supplies coming in. Here over at Spangler, we've now started this week some of it temperature here. We've taken temperature on the head of people coming back, because we have our technicians and everything that have been coming in for the last, you know, 8 weeks or so like that there. And we've been monitoring them there. Some of them come in, they've been out, you know, all night working or something like that. But we say, hey, you know, how do you feel? Well, I'm not feeling well. Okay, go ahead and go home. Oh, one of them's just sweating, you know, here, and I don't know what's, you know, I think I have a fever. We were like, whoa, time out, you know, and, you know, go straight to the doctor, and you're not coming back until you have a negative test for COVID or a doctor's note. You know, we just don't know. So one of the signs of COVID was, of course, you know, fever. But it ended up being an ear infection, and things were good there. We also had one go home, and he tested negative for it. He was just, you know, it was the flu. But if we're turning around and we're not watching our staff here and just letting them come in and go out and do these, you know, the cross-contamination factor is huge in this here. And you walk in, and like I said, it's coughing, it's touching, it's person to person, and you know, no one really knows that definite answer of how long this stuff lasts on what kind of materials. And so that's why we're having a sign-in sheet here. We are on key fobs and everything else here, and so we do, if somebody does come up positive or something like that, we do know who checked in at what time and who was in these days. But we actually turned around and just figured out the other day that we could not really control the social distancing of our front office staff, which may be 20, 30 people from accounts receivable and everything else there. They were just talking. They didn't want to wear masks. So we turned around and we told them, hey, go back to the remote learning until we really, you know, another month goes by. I mean, remote learning, remote working from home until we know more about this here, and we can kind of get a better hand of, hey, you know, our in the Carolinas here, North and South Carolina, you know, they're opening up everything here, and you know, cases are still kind of going up. Down in South Carolina, they've opened up the restaurants and some of these things here, and I have a friend of mine who's in Rock Hill, and she said, guess what, you know, cases are coming into the emergency room where she works down there, and everybody's worrying about it, and they're taking tests, and tests aren't coming back as fast as they need to, but people are coming back. So, you know, it goes back to what I was just saying is we you know, these everybody that's on this call right now who has a general population of workers for them that goes out to do this service and everything else really needs to start monitoring their crews and making sure that, you know, proper steps are taken in the office to kind of minimize the whole risk of this. I mean, the whole thing is risk when you think about it. What are the chances that this virus is on something? No one knows. It's, you know, who knows what it is? Million to one, who knows? You just don't know, but you got to take these precautionary steps starting at our facility, going into your facilities or whoever we're going into, and go from there. And I think a big part of it is the educational part and the expectation of the client of what they want done. You know, the hardest thing that I've seen right now is nursing homes, and they want us to come in and clean and fog. Okay, well, what are you going to do with the seniors? Can't tell them to go sit out in the parking lot. you know? And so they're like, hey, can you come in at midnight? Yeah, we can come in at midnight, but then they're sleeping. And, you know, how many of these people can you control to the point where, you know, if you're doing any kind of fogging or anything, does it go underneath their door? Do they have a return in the air conditioning that's pulling their stuff in there? So these are the things that come up. I mean, you're constantly brainstorming of any kind of liabilities, cautions, and stuff like this to make sure that you're covered liability wise. You know, even people here ask, you know, Bob, if I come back and I'm tested positive, one of my technicians, and we're positive, are you paying for us, you know, to go to the hospital? And I told them no. And I turned around and told them, you know, we're not going. Well, why? Because we don't know where it came from. You may have got it on the job. You may have got it when you were at the gas station today. There's no sense. Your health insurance will still pick up your costs, but, you know, everybody needs to do their part by cleaning their hands, you know, and doing every precautionary item they could do to reduce it. So that's kind of how we're doing it from A to B, starting here at our office all the way to the end of the job.
Should we talk about briefly on with, you know, reoccupying buildings, reopening things? I think as far as, I don't know, potable water, for example, and the issues there. I mean, do you think that that's something?
Yeah, definitely is. Bob, Sabrina, I wanted to thank you all for your content so far, and that actually is an excellent segue into some of the questions that have popped up. What are you guys doing or seeing? Being in the restoration business, a lot of times pipes burst or sinks clogged, things like that create water damage. So what about these facilities sitting idle for so long and then returning to work? What have you guys seen or can provide guidance on for us facility managers returning to work?
As for like water damage and stuff? And those kind of things, mold?
Well, not necessarily water damage, because ideally there wouldn't be, you know, if we've turned off sinks or coffee filtration, ice and water machines, things like that. Right. What would be the return to work sort of a strategy for a facility manager in that situation?
Yeah, that's a good point. I had an engineer the other day from, up and down Charlotte call me about an odor that he was getting, and come to find out, the P-traps in these bathrooms had dried up. Literally, actually, there had been nothing in there, and nobody in there. The toilets are dry, and I told him, I said, you know, he said it smells like sewage. Well, believe it or not, we would go around, we would find some that actually had, water that was, you know, it had already evaporated down to where there was that seal, the P-traps had evaporated. The buildings, a lot of these buildings I'm still finding are still being heated and cooled, you know, properly there. I've gone in, they're hotter than some. The humidity is a little bit higher in some of them there. Some of them are cold, they just want to keep things fresh with more air exchanges and everything else in there. But, you know, I did see that in this. I think there's somebody here from Royal Cup. We have Royal Cup here in our office, and they've come by here a couple times and asked, hey, you know, have you seen the decrease in water? Is this being used, you know, regularly like it is? Everybody's been in here. It's been working fine. But there are questions that were asked, are these filtration systems? Is that water gone stagnant in there? Do they need to move around? Do they need to be flushed? I'm not a professional on that there, but water does go stagnant in there. We did go back to, just to jump back, you know, the engineer went and they started flushing toilets all the way up and down and everything else, and it did go away. But I also told them when we kind of winterize homes or stuff like that, we'll take baby oil. Just regular Johnson & Johnson baby oil, and we'll turn around and put a cap full in each toilet. Well, it puts that layer of oil separating with water where the air can't get to the water and it won't evaporate. And that was probably, I guess, about 4 weeks ago. They had been closed about 6 weeks, and he called and said, hey, that thing worked great. So little ideas like that, you know, tricks to the trade. But as for the water, I mean, I think flushing is the best way. You know, and through there, water fountains, keep the water fountains moving through there. you know, the drain where the P-trap is will clog up and you know, go from there. But I would tell them, hey, resort back to your beverage provider or whoever it is about the filtration and stuff like that, and they probably will give you a much better answer than
I guess checking all of those water systems is key, because that's going to create other issues, which, you know, we have other emergency restoration people on the call. It's if those measures are not being taken, we're going to be responding then to water damages that could have been prevented and other issues.
Quick issue, one more point that I did, and I have seen it because people aren't used, but in men's room with the urinals that still have the handheld, the manual pull down, apparently plumbers have even been telling me that they're drying up because they're not being used. And so what happened, you see that, Don? And so when somebody comes in and they go ahead and pull that to flush that urinal, that gasket in there that, you know, is the pressure pushes it and closes that valve back on there, lets go, and it'll blow out. So, yeah, good point. I mean, I have seen that also and responded to one or two calls where they said, hey, we got a water loss that came down. We caught it pretty quick, but somebody came in flushed, and it didn't close the valve and it kept running, or it started leaking back out. So, yeah, good points.
We've got one more question from the chat box, and then we'll turn it over to Courtney and give her takes from an HVAC perspective. The question in the chat box kind of related back to a question earlier about training that Jeff and John, it was posed to Jeff and John, but has Spangler and Restoration, have you guys done anything for training the individual employees?
We have. There's not really an IICRC class out there right now. There are some classes out there by Zach Academy and a couple others out there, Cornerstone, that are 4-hour classes up to 8-hour classes. We have had, if you're going to work on a COVID case or anything like that, Spangler's requiring that you have your biohazard certification, and then either through RSA or IICRC, and then also you have your AMRT, which is your mold certification. The reason why is both of those really focus on PPE. On there, we have some guys that decided, hey, they'll shave their beard so they could have a full face on, and they're the ones that those are the lead techs that handle these confirmed cases when they come in. Now, if it's not a confirmed case, it's precautionary. They're in their PPE with like just N95. We've even had some of them that have turned around and just said they're not going to do it. They just don't feel comfortable with it, and that's perfectly okay. You can't force somebody to do it. Now, we have meetings every week, and we have also lead supervisors that actually will go to some of these jobs and make sure that the proper PPE, the proper protocol is going on there to make sure nobody's cutting corners, you know, there. I mean, it gets hot in these suits, making sure that the antimicrobial is being applied the right way, you know, there's proper coverage being put on there. So we're constantly doing those kind of classes and quick talks and discussions and everything else about that. But you have to be biohazard certified and mold certified and or to really be like a lead tech on these jobs. And then, of course, if it comes to a confirmed case there, so some of the points that I've educated to some of these, you know, larger customers of ours is we will have a controller on site. We're going to turn around. We're going to have one guy that's going to be there that may be outside. If they're larger, 100,000, you know, square foot facilities and stuff like that there, you know, you don't want somebody going outside, you know, going in, working and everything else, and then going outside and going and get this and taking this off. So there's a controller that controls what's been cleaned. They make sure that it's kind of designated with a sign, with signage or something like that. That's been cleaned, keeping track of going through, because it's very easy to miss these steps moving through there. That person provides additional PPE if something breaks, making sure their masks are there, making sure they're hydrated. When you start getting, you know, dehydrated, you know, people start cutting corners and they just start rushing to try to get out. And that's absolutely what you can't do. So these are the kind of control thing factors we have in there, and the training that we're doing right now for this. Because I believe we've only started climbing the hill towards us. I think the peak is going to be, you know, still months away, and then it's going to go.
Bob, excellent point there. Excellent point. So this question is really an excellent segue into Courtney, your perspective from the HVAC side. What are managers doing to HVAC to bring in fresh air into the buildings? But now take that outside of a facility manager, what are our HVAC companies doing or seeing being done in other facilities to introduce fresh air into buildings?
All right, I'm going to unmute myself now and jump in. So I haven't really dealt with the fresh air intake. We've been dealing more with, you know, jumping right to where the unit is and how can we deal with, I guess, on that side, how is the fresh air coming in and what air is already in the building to a sense, to pathogens, to what, like, microbials, all of those things, what's already present there. So we're focusing more on that and how we can go from there to make it more safe and make people come in and not worry about the air quality control. So we've actually partnered with a company called GPS, and I'm going to read a lot of it off of kind of what we've started. It's been a new process. We're just offering it to clients now, but it's a needlepoint bipolar ionization. So it's a pathogen control and odor removal, particulate elimination, and then it's energy efficiency. So it's actually not having to do much with the unit, but the product of GPS does sit in the unit and it will keep the coils clean longer than even just a typical cleaning. And it's a very cheap cost compared to kind of the other UV way that people have gone in the past. And we've moved away from just doing UV lights because that's a constant check of, hey, are the lights still operating? Is everything still fully functioning in the unit? Whereas the GPS, it does have a longer value in the lifetime where it's not going to need the constant maintenance on it. And then it is a self-cleaning product and it has static electricity control. It reduces allergens. Like I said, it's a smaller cost compared to the UV light because you're not constantly changing the lights. And then it will help almost reduce the amount of times we're going to have to touch the coils to clean the coils, which is a big cost in maintenance also. So we've been partnering with GPS for the past couple weeks now, and we're introducing it to our customers and putting it in these maintenance plans, because the other problem we're running into is, right, a lot of the people don't have the capital budget saved. They don't have the money ready. We weren't prepared for this when it came to a 2020 budget. So with a lot of our clients, we're putting it in this maintenance program where you run the maintenance program and we'll put the cost of the GPS product along the way. So if you have a 3-year contract with us or a 1-year contract, you're able to spread out these payments. So you're not getting hit with that holy moly of an upfront cost again. So that's what we've been doing so far. And we've seen great results from it. There's great studies done from the GPS. And that's something we can provide to anybody who would like to see the results from it. And it's been a blessing to have, again, being able to spread out the payments along the way.
I guess we'll go ahead and open it up. Courtney, what things have, from a service standpoint, have you seen that facility managers are deferring maintenance activities?
We're actually seeing, we do a lot of mission critical, so we're actually seeing a lot of facilities needing maintenance earlier now. They want them sooner. We have buildings that are already opening back up. We have clients that are kind of ready to jump back in and put people in their facilities full time. But to do that, we need to make sure maintenance is back up, especially with the fluctuation of the temperature lately, with us having that cold front we had last week, and then with it being 87 degrees, the units are kind of in that haywire. If you're not doing the maintenance, you're going to run into a lot of service calls because your units aren't prepared for the warm weather that's coming. If you haven't had your spring major PM done and you're going into this warm season, you're going to have service calls, you're going to have units trips, you're going to have coils burn out. So we've definitely been continuously doing maintenance throughout this, and actually people asking for additional maintenance along the way, whether it's an additional coil cleaning or putting in this unit of a GPS to monitor everything.
We had a question just pop in. Are HVAC companies recommending ionizers? And you actually touched on UV just a minute ago, but ionizers or UV products or others to help kind of suspend, I guess, the transmission of this disease would be the best way to put it.
Yeah, so the GPS would be a bipolar ionization, so that would be providing the ionization of the unit and cleaning the air quality and getting out those pathogens and controlling them. It's almost like deactivating the pathogens that are in the air, to a sense, if you can think of it that way. Rather than just killing, it's deactivating them.
Go ahead, Rob.
To touch on the GPS units, I'm with a company, Total Comfort Solutions. We've been using them for about a year and installed them in about 18 hospitals. If you haven't looked into them, look into them. Mm-hmm. The thing that's really good about them, they actually reduce the amount of outdoor air needed to safely ventilate. And so definitely something to take a look at if you haven't heard of them before.
Yeah, we just installed about 20 of them yesterday, and we are doing about a new install for them every single day at this point. So people are aware, people need a plan when people are coming back into the office. People want to know what we're doing or what a facility manager, property manager is doing, because air quality, we're so concerned with even walking by someone at this point. So if we're not cleaning the air and making sure it's pure and nothing's in there, then people are very skeptical to come back, just like in the sense of any janitorial or cleaning the area. I think it's just as major as that at this point.
Are there any questions, thoughts from the audience? Anyone? I have one, Courtney and Rob. You actually mentioned reducing the air for recirculation purposes, reducing the outside air. But what I've read is kind of contradictory. I've read both, you know, reduce the outside air or increase the outside air recirc. Can you guys help provide some guidance?
Yeah, the main thing is, as far as CDC, one of the things that they're recommending is, of course, opening up economizers to bring more fresh air in to dilute pathogens, you know, all that type of stuff. Problem with that is going into the summer, starting to bring more fresh air in, what you're going to run into is you're going to run into humidity problems because of the fact that the HVAC it's not meant to be majority of them aren't meant to be strict outdoor air designated units. And so they have a certain design that allows for, you know, what they're designed for, the amount of air to bring in. Problem with, you know, just going around and opening up all the fresh air economizers is just that. It's going to get into a problem of a lot more energy used and a lot more humidity issues. Mm-hmm. The thing that's cool about the GPS units is, if anybody's ever heard of bundled energy solutions, that's actually the GPS units. We're an arm of ABM. They actually put GPS units in every single one of the HVAC units. And they pay for them up front because of the fact that it gives you the ability to get the same effect without having to mess with the outdoor air dampers. So you're able to kill pathogens. Main reason they open them up is to dilute. But with the GPS, you know, it has white papers on killing pathogens, mold spores, and, you know, even common flu. So what happens is you're actually able to get the effect of overventilation without having to consume the energy and, you know, mess with the humidity issues that come from playing around manually with outdoor air dampers.
Any other questions for any of our speakers?
I do have one question. I heard the term GPS, but I didn't catch what GPS is.
Yeah, I got a link I can send you guys.
Yeah, it's a global plasma solution. That's what it stands for.
Okay. I was going to ask about plasma. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
I can send you that too, Don.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
I'll shoot you an email right now.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For those attendees on the call, I would like to recommend checking out the chat box here. There's been a lot of positive things going out there from one of us. for this peer-to-peer learning is excellent for these type of meetings and for anything that IFMA Charlotte does. So there's some links on there to the GPS stuff. There's also some other things, considerations from our speakers. I would like to thank John and Jeff with Redley, Sabrina and Bob with Spangler, Courtney with Airtight Facilitech. If there are no other questions, we can go ahead and close. And let me go ahead and first off, are there any other questions from the audience?
Hey, Dallas, I just wanted to take a second just to remind everybody that the chapter does have an app you can download. So I'm just reminding everybody about that. It's a great app. It has links to our newsletters, member directory, and other information.
Thank you, David. So that is an excellent reminder there that we do have the app. We also have our fireside chats happening every Friday at 11 a.m. Our next virtual meeting will be Thursday, June 11th. I'm pretty excited about this. It will be a leadership roundtable breakfast. The details of that meeting are still being worked out, but pay attention to your email newsletters and to the website for further information about that. Download our app. That's the easiest way that you can register for any event, whether it be our normal chapter luncheons like this one, albeit without food. But you can register for any chapter event. You can check out our newsletters on the app. You can also check out the previous events and presentations, and pretty soon, these video links and webinars like this. The webinar and virtual sessions presented by IFMA International, there's a plethora of them out there. There's a bunch of COVID-19 resources for all of our FMs and our service providers on the call. So with that, go ahead and end the meeting a little bit early. I'd like to thank you all for your attendance, for your participation. Thank you again, John and Jeff with Redley, Bob and Sabrina with Spangler, and Courtney with Airtight Facilitech, your presentations and your peer-to-peer kind of learning in today's session.
Yeah, and just so you guys know, I mean, if you do have any questions, you can follow up. There was a slide. We didn't use a slideshow, which it was very brief, so our points were kind of all around. But if you guys have any questions or you want to email something, I mean, it's all about collaboration. It can be any of us. Just, you know, Bob and I have our email up there. Email us. I mean, we see things from a very different side, and we're always willing to talk and help everybody.
And this presentation will be available, John and Jeff and Courtney, with your information on there as well. So if anyone does have any questions, please check out the presentation. You can get the links of which will be on the newsletter and in social postings, et cetera.
Hey, Dallas, this is Jeff. I just wanted to let everybody know, too, we developed a very brief, high-level sort of a building reoccupancy guide that we've put out. And if anybody's interested in that, feel free to email either John, me, or Chad, and we'll be more than happy to share it with you. Something you can customize and you know, for your use.
Jeff, if you don't mind, can I get with you after this, and we'll include it in the presentation?
You bet.
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you all again. Have a good day.